You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into LoHo Daily. I am LoHo, a.k.a. Lawrence Holmes. Thanks so much for hanging out with me on the podcast today. So, as we've tried to talk about everything that is connected with the death of George Floyd, I've been mindful about what voices I want to put on the air, the people that I want to talk to, the people whose opinion I feel like you need to hear, and also mindful about making sure that I'm not asking people of color, black people specifically, to do heavy lifting if they don't want to. Those are things where I know that I'm trying to talk to as many friends publicly as I can, but there is something that wears on you as you talk about these injustices over and over and over again. I know that I've gone through the fatigue, so I'm trying to be mindful of that fatigue for other people when I reach out to them and ask them to do stuff. So in the case of Charles Tillman, a person who I adore and whose opinion I really respect for a lot of different reasons, which will become a little bit more evident inside of this interview, my approach to asking Charles to come on was a little bit different than it would ordinarily be. Ordinarily, it would be something like this. Like, I would text Charles, like, hey, you have an event coming up. I'd love to get you on to talk about it. Maybe we could talk about some other stuff, too. Like, that sort of thing. Like, you're booking someone onto your show. What happened this morning was different. I just texted and said, because I've been watching Charles on Twitter over the last couple of days, and I know that he's been having conversations with people about George Floyd on Twitter and on Instagram. And some of these conversations are not appropriate for Twitter or Instagram. And what I mean is that it doesn't allow you to have as much context in a conversation when you're limiting characters, and it's a form of media that doesn't allow for nuance or inflection in your voice. It isn't always suited to amplify whatever message that you're trying to get across or allow you to come across the way that you want. It's part of the reason that being on Twitter can be so infuriating, is because you have those limitations to it. So people end up in arguments on Twitter that agree with each other because something is lacking from the interpersonal aspect that often leaves us confused. So what I did today was, after looking at a couple things that Charles had tweeted, I just texted him and I said, I have a platform. If you want to use it, we can use it. He said, what time? And then we got it together and we got him on the show. I mean, you guys know how I feel about Charles, and I'm pretty sure I know how you feel about Charles, which is one of the reasons that I reached out to him. His perspective is valuable. And one of the things that I learned in this conversation, Charles is a much more forgiving soul than I am. Like, I'm still pretty angry at Drew Brees. Charles is actually friends with Drew Brees. And hearing him talk about his relationship with him and what building bridges to getting everyone to a better place, what he says about that, I think is super valuable. And it was valuable for me to hear it. I also like, when I have interviews like this, I like for the interviews to live in one place. And we did the interview over two parts on the air. You don't have to worry about that here. You can get the whole damn thing in one place. So I wanted to offer a platform to one of my friends who I think is visible and responsible with his opinions, but he has a story to tell, and I enjoy talking with him. I think that there's something that all of us can learn from this conversation. And as I said, I learned something today that I need to make sure that while my anger is righteous, that I still have enough room in my heart to forgive those who want to be forgiven for their transgressions. So I thank Charles Tillman for helping me learn that. I hope you enjoy the interview if you missed it. Charles was really, really terrific on these things. And all I wanted to know from him first off was, how's he been doing over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I think I've been glued to the tube like everyone else, just kind of shocked what's happening in the country today or United States. Sad. I'm sad that it had to come to that, you know, for Brother Floyd to be executed the way he was, and to the results of, you know, after the death and the riot and protest and everything. I'm just, this is America. This is where we are right now. And I think that's just the, I don't know. I'm hurt by that. I'm sad by that, to see, you know, the anger and hatred of certain people and individuals. And I just, hopefully we can get something good out of all of this. And I'm very optimistic that change will come. Something positive has to happen, you know. And I'm looking forward to the next steps. You know, we got the word out, the message, the protest. So let's phase two. Let's see the change. That's what I'm ready to see now. I'm ready to see people working on that. Truly, I am.
I
think it'll happen.
I've always appreciated your worldview, like being someone who was born in another country. Although technically you were born in the United States as on an army base, but to have that experience and then to grow up in the South. So to be a black man, to grow up in the South, to be in Texas, to be in Louisiana, what are the things that you hope that people can learn from your experience with not just growing up inside of places in the South, but also dealing with police?
I think there needs to be a happy medium. You know, police need to be able to do their jobs effectively. However, I, as a black man, shouldn't have to worry about being shot or having your knee put on my neck and killed. You know, I definitely think there needs to be a medium in between that. And through conversation, through training, through people getting to know, hey, this is what you need to know about black, this is what you need to know about white, just learning the difference, learning about each other's cultures and knowing that, okay, I didn't know this is what black people did, or I didn't know this is what white people did. Like, I literally just got off the phone with a very good friend of mine, a mentor of mine, and we had this conversation, and he's a white guy, and he said, man, Peanut, I'm glad you shared that with me. I didn't know that. This is very informative. Like, thank you for telling me that. And we just, you know, we talked about the term white privilege or privilege, and I kind of said, I was like, well, you know, I don't think that when you say that word, I think white people, they assume that you're labeling them a racist. And I'm like, no, that's definitely not what I'm saying. You know, I've had more of my white friends call me and just to express feeling concern. And we just had like an open dialogue, an open conversation. And it wasn't hateful. It wasn't, you know, we weren't angry talking and yelling at one each other. It was just an open conversation. And I think that's what needs to happen. And he flat out said, he's like, well, what do you mean white privilege or privilege? Like, what does that even mean? And I was like, well, you know, I don't think your skin color works against you. Now, you could be poor, immigrant, you don't speak the language, whatever, but your skin color doesn't work against you like mine does. You know what I'm saying? And very just like, wow, I never thought of it like that. Yeah, you're right. And again, one of my best friends, loved this man like a dad. And we just had an open conversation. And I think it needs to be more of that going on. I tweeted something and some guy was like, I feel insulted about, right? I'm like, dude, I don't even know you. I'm not saying you are racist. You might be, middle class working guy who busts his butt every single day. I am not calling you a racist. That is the furthest thing from that never even came out of my mouth. If you think that, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. If you thought that, don't perceive it that way. That's not what I meant. That's not the route or road I was trying to go along. I'm just saying your skin tone, it works with you. It helps you just because of the color of your skin. That's not your fault. Just like it's not my fault I'm black. I was just born this way.
And I try to explain to people from my point of view, like if even being a light-skinned black man, that I have privileges that you as a dark-skinned black man don't. That there are people that will perceive me as less threatening because I'm lighter, or they might think that I'm mixed race, and that offers me into spaces that darker brothers can't get into sometimes. So trying to explain to people that spectrum of privilege, I wish that there would be people like your friend that understood that, all right, this is something that you don't quite get, but you were willing to open your mind up to understanding it.
Yeah, and it's just, that's why, the tweet was really saying, get comfortable being uncomfortable talking about this conversation. Like, you're going to get uncomfortable, and that's okay. Like, get uncomfortable because you have to have this conversation. I'm eating dinner last night with my kids who are mixed, and I'm talking to them and telling them about my racial experiences as a child, and they're like, really, Dad? You that really happened to you? I'm like, yeah, it did. I was in third grade and this happened. They're like, wow, I never knew. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm successful and I've done things and I played in the NFL and people know who I am. And yeah, but at the end of the day, I'm still black. You know me in Chicago as Peanut the Peanut Punch. Woohoo. But when I step out of Illinois, or if I go to another state, or someone who doesn't or isn't a football fan and they don't know my accomplishments or anything that I've done, they just see me as a black guy. And money, fame, that doesn't get me out of that situation. It's just like, well, who is this black guy? And that's what I was trying to tell to my kids. And I think I tweeted some guy. He was just like, I'm like, look, man, have you been drug out of your car just for, well, you look suspicious. Come on, get out. Like that's how you treat me right now? Like, I didn't do nothing, man. Like, I live in this area. Here's my license. Like, why are you treating me this way? I'm good. I didn't steal nothing. I don't care. Get out of here. Like, all right, here we go with this BS. Okay. I already know what time it is. Just trying to get people to understand that, I think, is the hard part.
Your kids right now are getting to a point where they're going to be leaving the house. Like, they're going to eventually get to be teenagers and in the car and all this stuff. How worried are you as the parent of children of color?
I'm nervous. I'm not going to say I'm worried yet, but I'm nervous. I'm nervous. Well, I lie. I'm worried because my nephew lives with me and he is 16 and he does drive. And I do live in a predominantly white neighborhood, and, having these conversations with him, it's difficult that you have to have a conversation with a young man about the color of his skin and just the area that he lives in and how people might perceive him as a threat. Like, that's hard to do. And it sucks. It friggin' sucks to have this conversation with him. Hey, if this happens, this is what you need to do. I know they look at you and they see you, but hey, when this happens, I need you to follow these specific steps so you can come back home to me.
Run down your rules, because I don't know if I think that there are a lot of my white brothers and sisters that they don't know that these conversations go on in black households. And right. I know that they went on in my household on what the rules are. So for your nephew, and I imagine your son, well, what are the rules when they engage in conversation with police officers?
Well, if they are driving, hey, or when he does drive, if he ever does get pulled over, I say, try to be as disarming and non-aggressive, angry. Just already have your license and registration, because you know they're going to ask for it. Already have that out on the dashboard and just have your hands on the steering wheel. I already have the window down so he can see inside the car. Like, look, my windows are down. My license registration is right here. My hands are on the steering wheel. And just, you know, answer the questions that the officer asks you. You know, if you feel like you are being disrespected, or if he or she is profiling you or treating you wrong, just get a badge number. You know, no need to do anything in that moment, because all you're going to do is just go to jail. And that's, you don't win that way. You beat them in the courtroom. That's how you win. We have to keep our composure. We have to be a cut above, a step above. And it's hard. I told him, I was like, it's going to be hard if this officer is very disrespectful and just demeaning you and just talking to you like you're not a person. I said, it's going to be hard, but you have to keep your composure. And we will win on paper and in the courtroom, not in this moment, because he can just take you to jail and then more officers will come and then something else will happen. Just listen to what they say. Try to comply as best you can, or comply. And we will win in a courtroom. We'll win on paper, but you can't win. You won't win in that moment.
And the idea is that the goal is to get you home, you know, like that's the part that makes me sad, is that in what we're telling our children is get home and then be alive. And then we can go and try to handle this another way. But that's something that I'm not sure. And maybe throughout all of this, there is a better understanding that that's a conversation that goes on in the households of people of color all the time. Like, get home, and it hurts, and you have to swallow your pride, and you think that you know what your rights are and when those rights are being infringed upon. But get home so that we're not mourning you, that you're not a hashtag. And then we can try to fight it. Like, it's exhausting.
It is. But let me say this, because I know a ton of law enforcement officers, a ton, not a few, I know a ton that do their job and they do it the right way. And a lot of them are federal, a lot of them are local, some of them are state. They do their job the right way. And I'm not saying that all police and no, I'm not, that is not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the ones that I've had a chance to be around, and I know they do their job the right way. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for them and for what they do, and for them risking their necks, keeping me safe at night. I'm very grateful for them and for what they have done.
I am too, but I actually kind of need them to do a little bit more, like rooting out those dudes that don't do it the right way.
Yeah.
That's key. A football question, which I wasn't expecting to ask you when but if you were Drew Brees' teammate, how would – he's already clearly been talked to by his teammates, and he's posted an apology. How important would it be to you to get across why you felt it was wrong? And is it hard for players to go at a player that decorated and that important to a team to explain to him where he may have erred?
I just think you talk about it in an adult manner. Hey, Drew, this is what I felt. I felt this, 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 and that. You just talk to him. And Drew would have to actively listen to what the complaint or what that person felt. And then that's when you start to have the dialogue. And it's not a, I think sometimes you have to swallow your pride and just like, you know what? I got it wrong. I didn't mean that, but you guys perceived it that way. I apologize. That was not my intent. That's not what I meant to say, or that's not the message I wanted to send. I was simply stating this. And I know Drew. I think Drew is a really good guy. I know when it's supposed to say you can look at him as an ally. I think you can. I think he is an ally. I think his teammates got him right. I think they got their point across to him. I'm sure there was some yelling, there was some screaming going on, but I think those teammates that comment hurt, I think they got their point across. And I'm pretty sure Drew listened. He didn't just say, well, to save face and save my rep and image, this is what I need to say. No, I think his apology was genuine. I know Drew. I've worked out with Drew. Good friend. I still think he's a good dude, man. I think these last 24 hours have probably been difficult for him, I'm sure. But I think his teammates will rally around him, and I think they will be okay. But, you know, in families, you have arguments. You know, things are said because you're angry. But when you at the end of the day, you have to sit down and get to the root of the problem. And hopefully the team meeting that they had, that coach
Payton.
What's the head coach name? Payton. Yeah, that Coach Payton had. I hope they got to the root of the problem to fix it, because you don't want that locker room to break up over this. Hopefully they can all band together and be one. Not just for sports, but just this is I think this is bigger than sports though.
I think it is but too.
I don't want to say fix the problem. I just think they had a good resolution to what was said and what happened.
You talked about it a little bit earlier, but you have, as long as I've known you, Charles, like you have a way of being optimistic that I envy sometimes, because you're able to see a lot of good in people. And I think that's because you've always opened yourself up to your plethora of friends is amazing. Like from the guy who's a Navy SEAL to garbage men that you meet on the street. I find that you have this incredible ability to run in a bunch of different circles. So because of that view, why is it that you feel like you feel maybe a little bit more optimistic over the last couple of days than perhaps a week ago?
With so much negativity that's happened over these last couple of weeks, we can only go up. And I try to see the best in you as the person. I don't care about, you know, your race, religion, whatever. I just try to see the best in you, the good in you. And we have more good than bad out there. And to anyone, to everyone who's listening to this, I love you for who you are and what you mean to me, not what you mean to everybody else. I love you for who you are and what you mean to me. And I love this city. I love this country. I know there have been some struggles that we've had, but I'm hopeful that through real talk and conversation and the people in power to help affect that change, my hope is that those people in power that can make those decisions and help facilitate the change, that they'll listen. They'll actively listen to people's problems and circumstances and situations, and try to make that change, because I don't think anyone has enjoyed what's happened these last couple weeks. If you have, you are one sick, you know what. But I think for the most part, we all want change. I think we all want to raise our kids in stress-free, hate-free environments where we can just like, yo, man, I just want to raise my kids and just live my life and just be the best person the best Christian man that I can be. And I want the same thing for you, whatever your religion, you know, your, I want you to live your life and not live in fear of being hurt because you think a certain way.
Can I ask you a sports question?
Sure.
Okay. Well, it's not really sports, but I mean, I guess it is. So we finished watching, all of us like finished watching The Last Dance. Did you watch it?
Oh, did I? Come on now, man. It will go down as the greatest sports documentary of all time, in my opinion.
What did you take from it?
I think that when Jordan, there was a lot of talk about when Jordan switched to baseball and he quit basketball. I think he got, people talked about him and he got some backlash. But people didn't really know, because I don't think Jordan ever talked about that. People didn't really know why he did it. And for him to, I think to be vulnerable and finally share that with the world, that was big on his part. And I respect that. And then the security guard, when he was sick and, you know, Jordan looked at him as a father, and you know, he was missing his dad. How he was in practice, his mindset, telling himself stories and people pissing him off and him just going to work. And yeah, he might have been a jerk to those teammates, but it made y'all better. I appreciated him holding people accountable and just wanting to be the best version of themselves because he wanted to win and he pushed people. They might not have liked it. And we all have our own style of leadership, but his was effective. You might not like it, but his was effective. You're going in the military. When you're in the military, drill sergeants are not your friends. They're there to get the best out of you. They see the potential that you have, and their goal is to make you into a soldier in a short amount of time. And when you are in the season, you only got a limited amount of time. So I got to get you right. And he did that for his teammates. And I just thought it was amazing. I think they could have won more had they kept the team together. Okay. I really think they could have won more if they kept the team together.
Before I let you go, tell the Jordan story in Charlotte.
Oh, what year was that? 16?
Yeah.
17? It might have been. No, it was 2017. I was in Charlotte. I went back to see my guy Kurt Coleman and Roman Harper play a game. And I was on the field talking to him. And then the game's about to start. I go back, and I'm going up to a suite. And one of the security guys says, hey, Peanut, take this elevator. I said, okay. And I walk in the elevator, and I kind of do a double take like, oh, snap, that's MJ. And it was me, MJ, and like two other people. So I get in the elevator and I'm like, man, should I say something? Should I just keep it cool? I don't want to be fanboy, but man, that's MJ. I've idolized this guy since I was a kid. So I'm like, do I have J's on? Please tell me I got my J's on. And I look down and I have the red 11s. And I was like, thank you, Jesus. So I look over and I casually say, hey, you like the shoes? And he kind of chuckled and was like, yeah, I like him. I already peeped him. And he's like, hey, he goes, I know who you are, Peanut. And I was like, what? And in that moment, I'm like, damn, MJ said my name. He knew who I was. And we literally just had a normal conversation. And I was extremely excited inside because he just knew my name. And then we walked and just had like a regular conversation. You know, and I was like, oh, yeah, you stay around here during the season? He's like, no, you know, I live in Jupiter and I'm here. I'm like, okay, that's cool. You know, I'm back in Chicago, you know, still holding it down. And we got to his suite first and he's like, all right, this is me right here. But hey, man, good luck to you. Stay healthy. God bless something along those lines. And I walk back to the suite that I was in and I look over it. And the people in the room, I'm like, hey, I just had a conversation with Michael Jordan. Like, no BS. I literally just had this conversation. And I think the most crazy thing about the whole thing was the man knew my name. He was like, I know who you are, Peanut. Like, I'm a fan. I'm like, are you? Wait, what? Literally, you can't make this up. I wish I was lying. I wish I could exaggerate the story more, but there's no need to because it's unreal just how it sounds. And we had this, yeah. As excited as I was, I tried to just tell my, like, hey, he just talk to him. Just he probably get the, oh, my God, MJ story all the time. I've gotten that once in my life. But
I don't know about that, Charles. You're one of the most.
I literally just tried to have a conversation with the man, and it was dope, and it was so dope. I love the film, the documentary. That's my MJ story. I'm sure people are like, yeah, BS. All right, it really happened though. He was just mad cool. We just had a regular, just casual conversation.
I love it because you're one of the most famous people I know. And for you to like fan out is hysterical because it lets you know how famous Michael Jordan is.
He is. I think that documentary just cemented him as the best to ever do it. I wish there would have been a documentary about Bill Russell though, because you know, with technology, social media, film, and all that, documentaries, they probably weren't doing it back then when Bill Russell played. But I would love to see something about Bill Russell and how he played the game when he played, because mm-hmm. the man was a force to reckon with. And I wish we could – I think sometimes we just focus on what we have footage of and what we see, and then the people, the players that have come before us, we kind of forget about them. But he is definitely one of those guys that I would love to just know more about and see film about who he was as a player and his mindset. And, you know, I mean, he's got 11 rings.
Yep.
He's got 11. You know how many that is, dude?
And I mean, well, it's 11. But you have him being – this black figure in a very white Boston back then. And it's that his story, like you talk about a civil rights leader, like Bill Russell is all of those things.
I would love to hear those stories. Like, how was it being one of the only black guys in this all white area? You know, I mean, I know you're great at sports, but what about when you're not on the court and when you want to just go have some lunch or go to a restaurant? How was that?
Yeah.
How was it when you went to the South? How, you know, like all that, that's what I want to hear.
And basketball players can't hide. Like you can, to a certain extent, blend in.
Right.
Even you, right. Like you can blend in a little bit, but Bill Russell can't blend in. I had this moment during All-Star, like there was this peace game that was going on at St. Sabina during All-Star weekend. And Bill Russell was there. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm at a point now in my life, in my career, where there isn't a lot of fan in me still. But when I was like, that's Bill bleeping Russell right over there. Like, he stood up and, like, the whole place gave him a standing ovation. And I was like, that's the man right there. That is Bill Russell. And yeah. He smiled. And he waved, and people were like, man, it's so great to have him in our city. And I'm with that. Like, I think that'd be a great choice. I'm excited about this Bruce Lee documentary.
Oh, I ain't heard about that.
Yeah, it's Sunday night on ESPN. The 30 for 30 called Be Water. So record it.
Oh, snap. Okay.
Because it's all about how he was trying to become a movie star and how Hollywood rejected him. Because he was Chinese and mm-hmm. all the things that he went through, like to build up to become a martial arts icon, man, I'm gonna be on the couch with some popcorn or something watching Bruce Lee get it in.
No, I didn't. I don't even think my kids know who Bruce Lee is, which is so sad on my part. I'm failing as a dad.
Well, make them watch the They should watch the documentary with you.
So I made my son watch Kung Fu flicks. We watched the Five Elements. It was an old school 1982 Kung Fu flick, right? And my son's like, Dad, their voices don't match their mouth. Like, what? I was like, I know, that's the best part about it. And you know, they're, you know, they're the sound effects, and he's like, "This is terrible. This is hot garbage, Dad." What I was like, "Man, this is the, you know what? This is Kung Fu." Like, I wanted to be one of the Shaolin monks when I was a kid. Like, this is me and my brother. This is how we used to fight. We, every time we punch, we make the sound effect. You know, we try to jump in trees and land softly like ninjas. You know how many broomsticks we broke trying to fight each other, thinking that they were damn swords? Oh my God. I loved the ninja and the kung fu culture, but I never got into it. Like, I never was in martial arts, but my brother and I, oh my man. My mom used to get so mad at us because we used to break the damn broom, and I could talk for days about these kung fu movies, man. Me and my pops and my brother, we would just watch so many. And here's the crazy part though, and I know we got to get off. I FaceTimed my dad, and he's like, "What you doing?" I was like, "Look what I'm watching," and he was like, "Oh shoot!" And I showed the kids. I FaceTimed him. Watching the kids, watching the movie, and he was like, "Oh, you crazy for that?" He was like, "Yeah, that's." He's like, "I remember that. Remember when we was watching his kids? Remember you?" I was like, "I know. That's. I'm trying to get him right, Dad. I'm trying, but I gotta let him watch a kung fu movie. They gotta watch a Bruce Lee movie though.
They used to have Samurai Sunday when I was a kid. So you just like Sunday afternoon on Channel 66, awesome. Like you just watch all of these crazy movies like the Five Deadly Venoms and all this stuff, and you're 100% right. Me and my brother is 5 years older than me, so I was catching the bad end of all of this stuff all the time. But you get into your stance, and you had your favorite fighter and all this stuff, man. It's the best.
It's awesome.
Charles, thanks for this, man. I appreciate it. I appreciate you being so open and candid, and I appreciate you sharing your story and standing up and wanting to have things be in a better place.
Well, no, just thanks for giving me the platform to talk. And again, my comments, man, it's not to hurt anyone's feeling. It's just really to get people to open up and just listen. I think that's the first step, is you have to listen just to the people affected by what's happening in the world. Just listen. Don't judge. Just listen. Just sit back and listen. That's all I'm saying. But as always, man, I appreciate our conversations, and man, I love this city. We can rebuild it. The Mag Mall will be open real soon. Go do some shopping. Go grab some food. I'm going to check out some restaurants in Hyde Park. Get it in,
indeed. Be well, go to work, and stay safe, brother.
Yeah, man. Later.
Later.